one of them like good morning and welcome. I welcome to your meeting. This phone is doing what my phone is doing. Must do what I'm doing with your phone.
Yeah.
Need some traffic. Yes, most welcome. Can I have a follow? Let me speak to a matter that I thought I would slot in under announcement. Now that two or three members will be leaving, and I'm happy that Mr. Mukhalafa is in touch. He's in the meeting. Members will remember that we gave them an oral report with a title of about five in our media. Now, that report is ready. But there is just one or two inputs and public works products that they want to factor in. And they will probably factor that in today in their meeting. That was one. Two, the faculty that we said the commission on facilities that they had first about that are now here with us. But now, so they will be distributed. To start from today onwards, because the number of my
yes, sir.
Well, yeah, but I want to hear you to that.
He used to, after the meeting, I'll make a follow up with the public works and I'll tell you.
Yeah.
And then we'll put together
and then we'll tell it to them.
And we'll look at it if we can to adopt it.
The problem, though, members, I request that members go for a consultation with their party. Because I don't know if you want to come here. I don't know what you are doing. Because when it comes to the mandate given to public works by Diana, and the mandate that the police is saying, give us the custodianship of the state properties outside the country, has got certain implications. One, it would be a new mandate for the Department of and then it would also trigger in an amendment to the other department. And therefore parties must give their approval. We will be contacting in our party and we're requesting that the major opposition party, the DA, to consult so that when ultimately we have to convert here, we stick at the committee, but also we don't get opposed by the leadership of our party in the country where they can on this money. Because this Monday has traditional and familiar to this particular. So it is contingent in that sense. And to that extent, we will be meeting with that people. I thought I wanted to tell you that from Halapa.
Yeah.
And I then told it to Honorable Alia.
Yeah.
But it is my hope and prayer that on the week of the that Wednesday, if party consultations are done, 13, 12, 14, 15, those days will consider and adopt that report, will look at the cost by cost, will do everything such that when we arrive on the 15th, we are actually carrying the bill and we are able to refer to the MA. Programming is our hope for now.
Mm.
And with that, let's impact it there. Now, we have dealt with apologies, and then Mr. Chetty is here, and in the company of the COO of the minister, and Mr. Chetty, Mr. Chris Chetty is going to deal with the presentation of the item, and the only item which is written for the department on the consular services. And this is a very important topic, because there are, from time to time, this is kind of, there are always matters arising out of South African society, in the English language. They say, meaning that there must be the eye for contact, so that I ensure that we can. Yeah, I was saying, from time to time, when the crisis of South Africa, who your relations are with, they want to hear the offer.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it's about the offer. They undertake private trips, and then they think that in other countries for crime and accidents, and many other things that the department is not aware of. But of course, the ambassador there, or high commissioner, has got to deal with maladies like that. And it would be good that you discuss this matter with the members here. If time and space could be permitting, you actually need to address caucuses of party. Because they're also traveling about. This rule is involved when they travel outside. I'm not sure if it is specifically this section of the department has this consular service. So this one is telling the ambassador or high commissioner. Or the state of the house, but someone, I did suggest that, time and space that they address other parties to them, that's for their education. But with that, let me hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, thank you very much for granting us this opportunity to present to you on consular services. My name is Chris Chetty, and I am from a unit called Consular Services, which falls within the branch State Protocol and Consular Services. Chairperson, you are indeed right when you say that this is a very important subject and a very important service that the department provides to South African citizens who travel abroad. I've noted in the letter to the Minister some of the focal points, which I will cover in the slides to come. But I thought, as an introduction, we will just give an overview of what consular service is all about, and then proceed from there to focus on those points that were mentioned in the letter. Firstly, consular services is the only unit in DERCO, that's the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, that provides face-to-face interaction with members of the public through the services that we offer. Consular assistance that South African citizens receive creates a long-lasting impression that of DERCO and the South African government. In some cases, some countries take their consular services very seriously. They have the consular services at the level of a ministry. Some of them have it at the level of a department on its own. Consular services refers to those services provided by a country to its citizens abroad. I think that's important. That we provide these services abroad. It consists mainly of qualified support to citizens who are in distress or destitute, provision of consular notarial services, civic and immigration affairs on behalf of the home, on behalf of Department of Home Affairs. I will talk more about these in the slides to come. Consular assistance is aimed at protecting the interests of our nationals abroad and keeping with customary international law and practice and the obligations that the government has towards its citizens. What is the mandate? The mandate against which we operate from is the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations, dated 1963, April. It describes the legal environment for consular relations between signatory countries and the rights and duties of such states. Now, in Article 5 of the Vienna Convention, it talks about consular functions, which is basically what we do. In Article 36, it talks about the responsibilities of the receiving state to the sending state on the topic of prisoners. And in Article 37, it talks about death. So that's basically the mandate. In terms of consular diplomacy, I will just give you an overview. It's a new term. It's now become a buzzword in the field of consular. Consular diplomacy has gained prominence in many foreign ministries, which is a dramatic turnaround from its earlier status as a routine activity which governments offer. Since the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations, which came into being in 1963, consular services across the globe had to adapt and innovate, develop new practices and responses to meet the contemporary challenges of the global citizen. What we're saying there is basically, since 1963, the world has changed in terms of the way people travel. People are, why we say global citizen, it's very easy to move from one place to another place. And in terms of flights, it's more accessible to people. People are traveling more frequently. Consular diplomacy today requires an ongoing sharing of ideas, best practices, innovation, collaboration in areas such as crisis response, training, and possibly some joint activities and research to advance the legal and policy framework that supports consular relations. Now, there's a body called the Global Consular Forum, which is called the GCF, or acronym the GCF. It's an affiliation of member countries, which meets annually. The next meeting that takes place is in Abu Dhabi from the 1st to the 3rd of October this year. South Africa has been now accepted as a steering committee member, which is on the executive. We've been accepted since earlier this year. So it's indeed a huge accolade for the department in terms of its presence on that stage of being internationally recognized as a steering committee member. What are the main functions of consular services? And I think this goes back to the introduction by the Honorable Chairperson. We offer non-financial assistance to destitute and distressed South Africans abroad. We help to determine the whereabouts of South Africans abroad, where there is a justified concern on the well-being of the person, provided we are in keeping with the privacy laws and whatever the person has requested us to do and not to do. We assist South Africans and their families in the event of kidnapping and hostage taking. Now, in that regard, you will remember that we had some kidnapping cases that were dealt with earlier this year, or should I say last year. We had the kidnapping of Mr. Stephen McGowan. He was taken, or he was kidnapped, whilst traveling through Africa on a motorcycle. He stayed in captivity for 6 years and was released last year in July through government interventions and negotiations. So that was a major achievement for the department. He was the longest person, South African, kidnapped abroad. The kidnapping took place in Mali. We have a recent case in November 2017 of Mr. Defender in Libya, which the department is currently dealing with. So these are some of the cases that we have when it comes to kidnapping. We protect the rights of detainees, prisoners, within the limits of local and international law. This example might be relevant, but not so much in terms of imprisonment. We had, you must have read the media, we had a group of 51 South African teachers that were detained in China. And the reason why they were detained is because they entered China through some unscrupulous recruitment agencies who took them to China to go and teach on a student visa. Now that is illegal according to the immigration laws of that country. So they were detained. And
that is a better reason. I thought you were going to say they were detained because they can't speak Chinese.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, when we spoke to some of them, they said that a lot of the instruction that they were given was in Chinese and it was done to frustrate them. But others gave an account to say there was Chinese instruction as well as translation in English. So, but it's a serious offense. And now, after that case was exposed, we have a lot of cases now coming up to say this number of 20, that number of 10 is in this province and so forth. And we are, through the Travel Smart campaign, we are marketing and trying to get the message out to say, be aware of the country that you're going to. Make sure you have the correct travel documents. Research the country properly. Do not enter the country if you're not sure about the culture, the religious practices, and so forth of that country. Be aware. We are advising our people. Therefore, we are going on this roadshow and this campaign to make the public more aware so that we don't end up with South Africans getting into difficulty like they've done with a group of 51 teachers that were stuck in China. And 49 returned to South Africa, and the Chinese, I don't know if it was by the grace of the Chinese authorities or whether it was the pressure that was coming from the BRICS and so forth, that the Chinese authorities, after we intervened with the ambassador, with our embassy in Beijing, that we managed to get them released. Their passports were then returned, and they were they actually even received tickets from the Chinese to come back home. And two were further detained, and they are currently still in China, facing criminal charges of illegally recruiting people to teach in China with the wrong visa. So they are receiving a prison sentence. We're waiting for an appeal, which the family has told that they are trying to source local lawyers in that country to support them. When it comes to assistance on cross-border child abduction in collaboration, we deal with those cases in collaboration with the family advocate. This is something that we find happening from time to time, where you have foreign marriages wherein the South African mother or the South African father battles to get the child back to South Africa, only to find that we had one case where the one parent asked the mother to please sign the document, and he said he's taking the children to the Lions Park. So the Lions Park required the document to be signed before they go there. So the mother signed the document, and the next thing she knew that they were in another country. And it was really, it's still a challenge. She's engaged legal resources to help her with this case, but still she remains without her two kids, who were illegally taken by the father and not returned to South Africa. So these cases, or these are the kind of cases we deal with the Office of the Family Advocate. Still with the main functions of consular, we assist with the processes for the importation of mortal remains, burial, cremation of deceased South Africans abroad. We find that there has been, when I later on talk about statistics, you will see that there's been an increase in the number of South African deaths abroad. So we assist with the importation of the mortal remains together with partner departments like the Department of Health and so forth with the certificate that they require to import the mortal remains. We assist South Africans during man-made and natural disasters abroad. These, from time to time, we have earthquakes, bombings. The last case we had was the hurricane in the Caribbean, where we had to network with partner countries because we didn't have presence there to make sure that our South Africans were safe in that area. And of course, in 2015 in April, we had the earthquake in Nepal. There again, we don't have presence, but we had to network with our partner countries to get assistance to evacuate the South Africans when they were evacuating their nationals. We assist with the provision of notarial services, which I'll talk a little bit more about in another slide. We provide guidance and assistance to foreign representatives in matters relating to their nationals in South Africa. Now, this is basically the foreign missions that we have in Pretoria. wherein their nationals end up in difficulty, whether it's in prison, whether they've been kidnapped. You must have heard about the case of the two British dual nationals that were killed in KZN. We were assisting the British on that case. And of course, from time to time, we have cases of foreign nationals being in prison and their citizens being in difficulty. We try to assist as far as we can with the relevant partner departments. In terms of service of civil process, this is another interesting work that consular services does. We facilitate the serving of civil process on respondents abroad, summons, court orders and so forth with people that are abroad. We also do the same for respondents who are in South Africa. We receive these instructions through the missions via the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We transmit requests for extradition, mutual legal assistance, and evidence on commission. So these are the interesting functions that consular is involved in. Now, coming to a very important question, what can we do if South Africans are in distress or destitute abroad? These are the limitations and the parameters in which we work in. We can make provision for emergency travel documents in cases of lost South African passports. The service is available abroad only. So in other words, we perform this function on behalf of the Department of Home Affairs abroad only. Here in South Africa, it is administered by the Department of Home Affairs. There is an emergency travel certificate which we call ETC when people have lost their passport. There is a one-way certificate that has been issued for people to travel back home only. So in other words, if they are stuck, say they lost their passport in London, they cannot go to another destination, finish up the holiday there, and then come back to South Africa. The ETC is to travel straight from London back to South Africa. It's a one-way entry. ETC, Emergency Travel Certificate. And these are processed by the Department of Home Affairs. We can provide appropriate help if a South African has suffered a serious injury, is a victim of crime, or in hospital. Now, I've read some other documentation which talks about our services that was given to me, and it's correctly captured there that we offer logistical support to South Africans should there be need for them to be repatriated where medical facilities in that country is not available and they need specialist treatment. So we'll provide logistical support to the families to evacuate the person back to South Africa to receive medical attention. We can provide details of local lawyers, interpreters, doctors, funeral parlors. But however, we are not responsible for the level of service or the effectiveness of the service, neither for the cost. And we also do not engage these private or these professional individuals on behalf of the South African. The families normally do it. But we give them the context that the mission might have. For example, if somebody is being detained and they need legal assistance, the mission will provide a database of legal companies or attorneys that they have in that country, which the family can then make a decision as to who they want to use based on cost factors and so forth, and then they can engage your services. But we do not stand a liability in terms of the effectiveness of that service. We contact detainees as soon as possible, like for example the South Africans that were stuck in China. We contacted them, the moment we received information, we made contact with the family. Of course, this is dependent on local circumstances. Sometimes if a South African is in prison or is detained, we rely on the local authorities of the country to inform us, to say that we have a South African that's been detained or a South African that's been in prison. Then we start making contact with the family. We offer non-financial assistance to families of deceased persons, which I mentioned earlier. With regards to consular and notarial functions, this is legalization of South African public documents for use abroad and providing commissioner of oath services abroad. There in Pretoria, we have a section called legalization, which falls under consular. And if people have public documents that they want to get legalized, then they will bring it to the department, and those certificates, if it's a degree or diploma certificate or it's a birth certificate whatever certificate has been issued by another government department, we will do the legalization of that. But we do not guarantee the contents of the documents. We only verify signatures of those documents. So example, another service that we can provide whilst you're abroad, if you're needing to purchase or sell property and you're abroad, then you go to the mission, wherever we are stationed at, and you can sign the purchase and sales agreement, which then can be sent on your behalf back to South Africa, or you can get the certification of the documents done there. Services not rendered, and I think, Chairperson, you did mention earlier on about services, that the do's and the don'ts, and what we can do and what we cannot do. Services not rendered by consular services. These are the following. Intervene in foreign courts and legal proceedings to get South Africans out of prison, out on bail, or an early trial, or give legal advice. We do not do that. Support South Africans financially whilst in prison. Request local authorities to give preferential treatment to South Africans. Investigate crimes of death or act as a tracing agent to find long-lost family members. In some cases, we actually received requests, can you please assist me to trace my family tree in this country? So we obviously refer them to some websites, but we do not provide that service. The judging of children that have been abducted by a parent or family member, we refer them to the appropriate legal channels which are to be followed in such cases. We do not pay for cremation, burials, or the repatriation of mortal remains back to South Africa. Enforce South African custody agreements abroad, or compel a country to decide on a custody case. We do not intervene on behalf of South Africans in dispute between employer and employee. What we found mostly in the Middle Eastern countries, that South Africans sign work contracts with the employer. Then when they enter into a dispute, then they want intervention from the South African government. This is after they signed the agreement. So that becomes challenging for us. Once they've signed an agreement, they are bound by that agreement. And some of them, they said the work conditions were not according to the way the job was at the time. So therefore we encourage them to make sure whatever you sign, you are fully aware of where you're going to and the working conditions. Ask people, check websites and so forth. I want to also just reflect on a few interesting cases that we've received, just for honorable members to take note of. In some countries you can be arrested for not paying your car installment. In some countries you can even be given a prison sentence if you survive a suicide attempt. So if you survive a suicide attempt, you can be in prison because it's regarded as an offense in that country. One interesting case that we had last year. A South African took his fiancée to the doctor for a checkup because she complained of abdominal pains and so forth. Then the doctor, after examining, asked who is the husband to this lady. And he says, I'm the fiancée. Then, obviously, after several questioning, he was then taken in for further questioning and detained and received a 6-month prison sentence for making a woman pregnant outside wedlock. So it is serious. It is serious. Even you must have read the media. We have this one case. Yes. Exactly. We have this one case in Dubai where a South African guy that obviously was detained as well for photographing members of the public. I wouldn't give names, but you must have read the media. And it is an offense in that country to do that. That without getting the consent of the person, you go and photograph the person, then it is regarded as an offense in that country. In some countries, and of course in our country as well, consuming alcohol is an offense. So, consuming alcohol in public is an offense. And also when it comes to travel insurance claims, your claims can be repudiated if you're found with alcohol in your blood. And this is the message we're getting out to. People end up enjoying themselves in parties and then getting involved in accidents after the party, only to find that the insurance, travel insurance that they took will not pay because that person had alcohol in the blood. So that's a very, very important point for people to note, or for our travelers to note. Another one is that you can rent a scooter in some countries without having a license for a scooter. But if you're injured in an accident, your travel insurance will not pay, plus you will have to settle the debt for all the damages regarding that accident. So that's another serious offense. Also, if you are planning a road trip, make sure that you have a valid South African driver's license and that you know the driving laws of that country. Be careful of who or what you carry in your vehicle, because the driver becomes responsible for any misdeeds of the passengers, even if the driver has no knowledge of these offences being committed. So that's something that we want our public to know as well. Another interesting example, we had an elderly couple that received a gift of suitcases for their holiday abroad, and they gladly accepted those suitcases, only to find when they reached the other side, those were lined with illegal substances, the suitcases, and then they were arrested for that. So, you know, we are advising the public, please make sure that you don't accept gifts of this kind, and if you do, make sure that you thoroughly check it out to see that it's clean of banned substances. You know, last week, Wednesday, we had a talk show where I presented to the youth on a program on SABC 1 called Daily Pepper. And the presenter said that she had a case where in Japan, somebody had Vicks in their bag, and then they were calling for questioning and detained because of the Vicks. They said the Vicks is a banned substance. The other one was codeine. Some of the medication has codeine. Codeine in some countries are banned. So if you have codeine in your medication, you're going to be obviously detained for carrying codeine or carrying the medication which has codeine. We advise our travelers to take your doctor's script along with you so you can justify why you have this medication with you. So, and therefore we say, research, know the country you're traveling, understand the laws of the country, the culture, the religious practices, and so forth. I think I covered most of the examples. Just one more. We received a case where a family was traveling abroad, and they had the children's toys all tied up onto the handles of the bag. And we don't know how this happened, but they say some of these toys were swapped with toys of a similar kind, but stuffed with the illegal and banned substances. Only to find when they boarded the flight, then they were called in for questions because of those toys being stuffed with illegal substances. So these are the dangerous things of traveling, and we always advise our travelers to make sure that they don't get into these kind of difficulties. Be aware of your luggage. Make sure it's always manned by yourself. Don't let your luggage go astray. I covered the one on the returning of abductions. We do not pay for the cremations. I mentioned that one. I think I've covered everything on that slide that I want to talk about. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, this next few slides is in response to the letter that the Minister received from the Portfolio Committee, and I am answering these focal points through these slides. The first one was, increasingly South Africans are found in need of assistance abroad or before they travel. Now, since the beginning of the millennium, which is the year 2000, we have seen a 41% increase in the number of people traveling. As I mentioned earlier, travel has become more accessible, flights are cheaper, people are receiving passports, and there is no difficulty that they have in getting visas, so they are traveling, either for work, for study, for holiday, and so forth. With the increase in the number of people traveling, we've seen an increase in the number of consular cases, with South Africans finding themselves in distress or destitute for multiple reasons, which I mentioned in my example. The Chief Directorate Consular services provide the systems and advice in close collaboration with our consular section in the South African diplomatic missions abroad. And these are embassies, high commissions, consulate general, which are abroad, and South African citizens can access the services whilst they're traveling into those countries. In those countries where we don't have presence, we have countries that are accredited, like for example, Nepal. They got accreditation elsewhere, so those embassies can be engaged to assist with South Africans that are in difficulty. Or, if we don't have accreditation, then we call on our partner countries to assist us. And I mentioned about the Global Consular Forum, which is a networking forum where we call on our partners to assist us. First assistance comes from the Commonwealth. Preference is given for those Commonwealth members that are within the Commonwealth to receive assistance when they need assistance. And of course, we have other regions like SADC and so forth. So those countries call on our assistance and we call on their assistance when we have consular incidents. Just one example. 2 years ago when we attended the Global Consular Forum, we met, we networked, I would say, with the Swedish. And there, I think approximately 5 months later, the Swedish that was kidnapped with Stephen McGowan was released. So then we quickly sent an email to the person that we met at the Global Consular Forum to say, as our counterpart, can you assist with Stephen McGowan? Because now that your citizen has been released, there is a possibility that whilst the iron is still hot, we can strike. If there's a possibility. Then they gave all the contacts that they had in Mali. They also connected our intelligence with the Swedish intelligence, which helped in the breakthrough on the case of Stephen McGowan. So these are the kind of networking that we engage in from time to time. So with regards to the assistance that South Africans can receive, Honorable Chairperson, you did mention about embassies and high commissions and consulate general. These are the kind of services that they will provide wherever we have presence. And as I said, in areas where we don't, we look at accredited countries or we look at partner countries that we have. Such assistance may include the provision of emergency travel documents, which I mentioned earlier, advice and support in the case of an accident, serious illness, death, or any other consular emergency that South Africans find themselves in. We do not render consular assistance to South Africans prior to travel. I just wanted to make that known. But we provide travel tips of do's and don'ts on our website for the public to note prior to travel. Now, I came earlier on and requested that these Travel Smart pamphlets be distributed. These are the pamphlets that we are sending out to the members of the public. We're giving it to provincial departments as we go through on our roadshows. We're distributing at strategic points. Later on, I will talk more about the Travel Smart campaign. Okay, what measures has DIRCO taken to improve the general understanding of consular services provided to South Africans at home and abroad? DIRCO has embarked on the Travel Smart campaign, which was launched on the 3rd of July 2018 by Deputy Minister Mohale. The purpose of this public awareness campaign is to make the South African public aware of DIRCO's consular services and the assistance offered to South Africans travelling abroad. The aim is to publicise DIRCO's consular services, which is offered to South Africans in distress and distress abroad, in order to adequately communicate these services and to ensure that South Africans are sufficiently prepared to travel for travel abroad. DIRCO will be taking the campaign on a roadshow, which includes radio interviews. We've released so far radio Ubuntu interviews, and I mentioned earlier on that we had one exposure on SABC1 on a program for the youth. TV stations, print publications, public lectures, relevant stakeholder engagements, printing of handouts, the ones I've given you today, placing of banners in strategic points. These are all the exercises that we are embarking on as part of the Travel Smart campaign to get the message out to the South Africans that are travelling abroad. How will the initiative of the Travel Smart campaign assist South Africans when travelling abroad? this is coming to, out of your letter, which we are answering here. With many South Africans travelling abroad for a myriad of reasons, and a notable number of South African citizens finding themselves in distress during their travel, the necessity to develop a communication strategy became apparent, hence the Travel Smart campaign which we are embarking on, or which we have already embarked on. The Travel Smart campaign aims to communicate travel tips of do's and don'ts and the services that DERCO can and cannot offer to the members of the public when they are traveling. As with any important service offered by an organization, it is incumbent upon DERCO to communicate its existence to the public through various internal and external media. How will the initiative of the Travel Smart campaign contribute to the improvement of service delivery? Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, we are compliant with all the Batho Pilo principles of consultation, service standards, access, courtesy, information, openness and transparency, redress and value for money. In fact, when it comes to value for money, we offer the services at no cost. Even the legalization services in Pretoria, it's offered at no cost. Whilst other countries charge for these services, we don't charge for these services. When it comes to service standards, we have a consular handbook and we have a service delivery charter with timeframes as to how public will receive, the timeframes in which members of the public will receive a response in terms of their consular query. With this initiative, South Africans can better be informed and better prepared when travelling abroad. In this way, we hope to manage the expectations of the public to understand what consular services can and cannot offer whilst they travel abroad. This slide talks to the statistics, which is very interesting. The total number of South African prisoners abroad as of the 31st of July 2018, 825. That's the number of South Africans we have in jail abroad. The number of consular cases dealt with during the financial year 2017-18, which ended on the 31st of March 2018, arrested, we had 111. Whereabouts queries from the family members regarding the whereabouts of their family members was 22. Number of deaths abroad is 165. Destitute and distressed general inquiries, 84. Child abductions, 6. Service of processes, which I spoke about earlier in the slide, 235. Extradition requests, 36. And the total number of public documents legalized is 60,443. What I wanted to just inform the House is that with regards to the prisoners, we have seen a decrease in the number of prisoners. 3 years ago, it was approximately 1,000. We've dropped down now to 825, obviously, because some of them have been released, and there's been no new arrests. Or if there were new arrests, it was not as high as over the previous years, because the public is becoming more and more aware of the do's and don'ts. This slide talks about the challenges and our plan of action as per the focal points that came from the letter. The challenge on efficient and effective delivery of consular services at the mission. We sent out a consular awareness memo from the DG's office on the 9th of October 2017 addressed to all heads of mission, highlighting the importance of the delivery of consular services. And if I can just speak a little bit, we did get queries from the members of the public to say, in our mission, telephones are not being answered. They rock up at the mission, nobody is there to assist them, and so forth. So just to make our colleagues at the mission aware and to reinforce this whole thing of consular services, the DG sent out this memo on the 19th of October 2017. Increase in the number of consular cases abroad, low public awareness on the role of consular services, and the high demand or expectations by the members of the public. The plan of action, the Travel Smart campaign to educate the public on the delivery of consular services. Challenge number three, DHA responses and support to our missions are not prompt. We have difficulties here, where if somebody's passport has expired or if they need an emergency travel certificate, we find that Department of Home Affairs is not so prompt. To mitigate this, we've sent a DG to DG letter addressing the challenges, and there's been an establishment of a DERCO DHA forum to highlight these challenges and to get quicker delivery delivery times from the Department of Home Affairs. Of course, like with any other government department, we have budget constraints for consular work at the mission. When you have people being imprisoned in a province that is far away from where the mission is, we have constraints on flight tickets and travel arrangements for the consular colleagues to go and visit this person in prison or that's been detained or even might be in hospital. The Minister's Office has drafted a memo addressing the importance of consular service admission and the issue of budget. What we are saying to our mission is to make sure that consular services is in the APP, which is the annual performance plan of the mission. So it forms an important part of the budgeting of the mission. And challenge number five, rendering of consular services in countries where we have no representation. I spoke about this earlier. Assistance from, we have honorary consuls in countries where we don't have presence. We have Commonwealth countries whom we can call on for assistance, and we have the Global Consular Forum and so forth. With that, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I want to thank you very much for granting me this opportunity to talk to you about consular services, which is a very, very important subject in government and is recently receiving a lot of focus and attention in the media. So I hope I've helped you with your understanding of the work we are doing, and I will pass it on back to the Chairperson.
Okay. May I ask to be excused?
Before you go on, can I just say that this brochure is captured on our website. It's available on Twitter. It's available on Facebook as well. We've got a director that deals with social media, so they have posted all this information onto the social media.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now we are taking comments.
Assist in the sending in case of this person. Now my question is that what was happening in the church collapse? When they not accepted the goal that was a disaster, that's how the church is to be accepted. You don't accept only the individual or even the disaster. We need to take this to work. Secondly, on page 8, talking about sending my gender, I think by considering that question on my gender, because the same thing with us. You expect people to say that bullets run, you know, the consular aspects are not intervened in the legal system to get a South African out of prison, a bail or whatever, anything in the legal way. Now, I'm telling you, talk about the future, there. What is the condition, therefore, if you say that you don't intervene, it's not that you are established as the committed of penalty. So, in that case, it's what you do. And in this case of it, I remember even the wine going to start in that because in the case I remember, maybe there are two that are also in that I'm not quite sure when women in South Africa fought went to the women coming about Amina Lawal, who was convicted, was to be hanged as a woman being presented as a prisoner. Now we are talking about that. I'm going to check what happened in this case now. Because Amina Lawal, South African, women assisted so that another can be hanged as a result. Even what happens in the second, who is being convicted? If the person was pregnant in December 2000. So, what happens? Only the female or the male also are being in that case. It was in the case of Amina Lawal, it was only Amina Lawal who was detained, not the father, the male counterpart. Lastly, on page 10, talk about public awareness campaigns.
Page
10. Okay. Talk about public awareness campaigns. And it also talks about your challenge of the low public awareness. Do you think that, do you include the Rwanda in your public awareness? Because there's a problem with the Rwanda.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm asking myself when you, even now, when you look at your message, you see some aspects whereby they are looking for young people to go and study overseas. And at the times when you get the website, they are not open to. So, Department of International Relations also assists in there because our youth, they are kept with this kind of access or scholarship. And the consular service, are you also working with the Department of Home Affairs? Department of Home Affairs, I think this kind of information, they go and apply, certain things apply for the passport. So that kind of service. Why don't we have a key in all these departments of the market? Just to, you know, as the public awareness that they be having this, so they must not find themselves in a threat with young people. And even this thing of applying for the blue card. Is it the blue card? Yeah. America's blue card. green card. That's the green card. You know, I still remember this other lady. I don't know where we were. She was talking about how lucky the doctor is. The doctor wants the green card, they want money. She was going to the bank to go and, I don't know, to deposit money and all. And I said, Mom, please wait. And the people are jealous of the child because he got the green card, applied for the green card, not knowing that this thing is, is also a scam.
What is the green card?
American.
Why again?
The passport to America.
The passport to America. Yeah, the green card. So that green card where with the Americans, because you're doing that consular service. The green card, he didn't get the email saying that he wants to go and work in America. So let's check on also on that, because some of our community members, they are not maybe, they don't investigate further about issues. Because the mother felt that some of her neighbors and family that jealous of their daughter because she got a green card. Because it's very nice that day. Lucky you. You are one of the lucky persons. You have been chosen to go and work in America for the green card.
Check
your today. On the news now. There is a guy who is being sentenced because he has sent him. So, what can you really just give us something that is really amazing about it? Because I was really shocked to hear about it. And there was another lady from Devon who was married to a Chinese listener. They had a baby. And when they arrived there in China, their husband said that no, she's taking the child to one of the relatives. Till today, what happened to that baby? And I think that woman was, she was really, you know, they were worried to be there, even there, with the mother. So I really wanted to check about it. And the other fact that our young girls are being tested to become okay. To become the okay, they go there in America to be like a small, you know, sophisticated lady. I can say the sophisticated lady. Okay. And then after this, I know one who was popular. And I see a woman who is also in the field, which is the actor now. It's scary. But I think that she should work very job in the Department of Education, Home Affairs, and Tertiary Education. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Council, to Honorable Kanda.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. It was quite kind of. I want to start with the pamphlet. I just think there's just too much words in the pamphlet. And maybe people won't be persuaded to read it all through and only go to the last bit, which talks about contact information. So when I'm bored, I read everything, including the cereal box. This, I think, is just too much for the casual traveler. Now, on this pamphlet, you've got contact information, and it's a switchboard 24 hours. I want to know who answers that switchboard. Because of the time difference, if something is happening in, say, Washington or wherever, and or Italy, what happens? How I want to understand how this works. Does an this person pick up that phone? Or even just a switchboard operator who might say, I night time now, direct your call or your credit in the morning. You know, we really hope they take us through any of the travel agencies, and maybe Saturday or Sunday you want to change it. It goes through to an emergency number. But it's actually a travel consultant who has that number, has that phone for the weekend, and can work out the computer and change the travel details. So I want to know what's the competency here. Is there a hotline as well available other than the switchboard? Because I'm not so sure about switchboard answering. The emergency travel certificate, is it issued under the authority of DERCO or Home Affairs? So if I had to recently deal with a Chinese couple whose passport they were lost in Italy, but they had on their phone photographs of the passport. Is that, I mean, I thought it was legitimate, but I just wanted to find out, would that be a legitimate way of saying this is me and here it is, you know, on my phone? Because as the Honourable Jackie said, we are moving more and more towards, you know, social media. Okay. So you said the two Chinese people, set up the whole Chinese MI in prison in China, and I understand that the law of China must prevail. Do the South Africans who were defrauded, I mean, do you know whether they've taken up the matter any further in terms of laying criminal charges against the agency that has done this? I'd like to ask, why did any money paid for Mr. Cohen's release? The gift of the givers stated that they were in negotiations, but they wouldn't say whether money was paid. I would like to know, does the department pay any money? Did you work together with the gift of the givers to get Mr. Cohen's release? There's currently a journalist who was kidnapped on his way to Syria, a closer journalist. I think Muhammad is the name. What is the status of that? Because the recent paper, again, the gift of the givers, announced that they were very close to getting his study. This is, I don't think you can answer it now, but it would be just interesting for the portfolio committee to know, how many countries do you have an extradition order with? And how many countries do you not have an extradition order with? And this also now ties in with the number of prisoners. You know, prisoners now in Thailand and all that sort of drugs, you know, we can't bring them back to serve the remainder of their service here, and that is because we do not have extradition relationship. So please, that would be very useful. Two prisoners, I remember about 3 or 4 years back, we went to Sao Paulo for, I think it was the ICU, and then I had the opportunity to visit some South Africans in the prison in Sao Paulo, and it doesn't matter that they were there for whatever reason, it was mainly drugs. But they were in a bad condition in the sense that, you know, the clothing that they had was big and sun, and they didn't have that. You know, when a visitor comes to visit a prisoner, they bring you maybe some food, they bring you some air time, they bring you some warm clothes. Does consular services do that for prisoners that are destitute in other countries? On page 4, usually consular diplomacy will do joint activities. Is this joint activities with the consular, other consular services in that country, for example, to South Africa, French, England, get together, or is it with some other organization? I couldn't pick up what your joint activities are in slide 4.
I don't take compliments from them, so that's an insult. Thank you very much, Tim. I think one of the problems that definitely has with the issue of the dark body, and I agree with Honorable Rafferty when he speaks about maybe that doing public diplomacy, in as far as assisting South Africans to travel abroad with this say dream of an American dream, or sometimes they are doing transportation of drugs. It's a serious problem. And I mean, saying that we have downscaled to about 800, it's still also in the indictment. I don't think it's something to be celebrated up until zero. And I know it's something that Minister Kolya must be effort of the security justice system, the police, and everyone else must be involved. But there's a big problem with that. And sometimes, and perhaps the travel smart must work better than the ROSA, because the ROSA was done to ensure that we assist our applicants abroad. But more and more we are getting reports that Honorable Rafferty and Honorable Kajan were giving specific examples of consular service rendered to South Africans in Britain. There is one again in Rwanda who has vanished. Because we created a Facebook post that was difficult to retain there. So it's very important that we sensitize South Africans. Sometimes when I receive calls about people in distress, you just wonder, I mean, didn't you know that you can't do that there? So they live out of South Africa, they are doing everything everywhere else except South Africa, whom they have. And sometimes it's not. There are things that you really don't do in other countries that you can do in South Africa. And it becomes difficult to explain to people that but you can't create a thing in a foreign country and end up in history. But let me drill down to the problem and the challenge that you raised, that number three, the government of the Puma Fed. Always my contacts of our parties abroad, they're talking about the issue of the civic documentation, the passports, the IDs, and the birth certificate. It looks like there is quite a delay in people getting there. Is it a problem of DIC of Home Affairs, or is it a problem of DIC in terms of the diplomatic effect, taking time to reach these embassies? What is the process that takes? Sometimes it takes 9 to 12 months for processing of those IDs and birth certificates. And the second one is the issue of the system of dual citizenship. Have we given enough public diplomacy or public information on when people can apply, when they relinquish their South African citizenship if they apply for the second state? Because a lot of people lose they are South African citizens because of the technicality, the time frame of application for citizenship. So where is the problem? And then general access to the service of consular services is very poor. You have to make sure that you check up the work of the consular service. And it's quite a very important service. And I think we don't have to restrict it only to the issue of traveling, but to the issue of the South African being distant abroad, and we don't do much on the side. I received a report that the contract of a courier company that transports civic documentation in London has expired 4 months ago, and it looks like it hasn't been renewed. So what is going on in terms of this? Because of them disenfranchising people don't have documentation, they want to register for elections next year and they don't have their documents, their IDs, their passports, or even their credentials. And the under-resourcement of the consular service. The website is not functional, the phone calls is not functional in the missions abroad. Whose problem is it? Is it anything is equal in terms of the staffing and the menu of the consular service. And the most important one, and the current one, is the issue of registration of South Africans abroad for elections next year. We received reports about Canada, Poland, and Switzerland, and France, where the embassies seem not to be quite ready and prepared to conduct voter registration. Again, where is the problem? Because it's Home Affairs, and what is being done? I've given specific embassies that we received queries from about the issue of registration. Is there general unreadiness of the nation abroad to register people to vote next year? Because there seems to be general complaints from the general public about the state of readiness of our embassy to register people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kalamba. Mr. Shetty, I'm also going to ask questions but also make some comments. Don't stress about all of the comments in the question. What I would advise you to do on the scale of is that please write them down so that both the minister and the deputy minister in the smart travel campaign can deal with them very, very comprehensively. Let me start this way. Congratulate the Deputy Minister on the campaign that has been launched and the Minister of the Smart Travel campaign with regard to consular services, spreading this campaign to many other South Africans. And they advise on two other things. One is that you see the website, the media, social or print does not have a far-flung reach like the radio. I wish the minister could be deploying people to different radio stations according to the indigenous language spoken there. For example, if you target the vocal, you have Kedi, Chivenda, something like that, if it's KZN, Zuzulu, if it's dedicated to Kota, things like that. We speak to the South Africans in their language and then we alert them about this thing, how many South Africans are detained in this country, what are the rules and so on. Because there are many who travel for different reasons. Men, the other category are the counselors. The counselors, not counselors. The MPLs in the 9 municipalities and the country, in the main municipalities. They are involved in traveling, they're doing municipal work, they've got memoranda of understanding with various countries, city to city, province to province. I mean, I've spent 15 years in the province of Bumala, where city to city arrangements, where province to province arrangements, particularly with the men. So, they don't know this kind of thing. So if the campaign can also target them, I don't know whether it could be called the mayor or whoever, but that's finding a way to target them. Now, the following question for you. What happened to illegal immigrants, South African illegal immigrants who just go to another country and they hear that what is the language is not immigrant, it's emigrant, emigrant. They are in Nigeria, they're working there, they don't have any work permit there. Then the next thing they are arrested, they die there.
then and the following category. Those who are in other countries have, I'm not going to say this, but we've covered some of them in the in the slide way of saying the following countries are not covered. Those who are involved in the criminal gangs in other countries, those who go to other countries because they think the prostitution services are lucrative, they go there for that, either illegal or because they've been prosecuted by agents and started living there, then the others are put in. Now, those who are joining military services for nationalistic reasons, for example. For example, South Africans who are of Jewish extraction, who go and join the Israeli Defense Force. For them, it is patriotic, it is nationalistic. What happens? Now, those who go and join the ISIS for religious reasons, you see, because they belong to a particular religion, they think the ISIS,
because they need a lot of workers in their industry.
country itself has not been, we can't say that. For the European Union, the USA, South Africa, in the case of Africa, for example, people would migrate from the African free state to South Africa because of stability and peace and employment opportunity. Then, part of the reason why they are xenophobic attacks is because people feel that they are in peace in their state, both economic, business, or otherwise, in peace in their state by people coming here and take their businesses or their jobs. So I'm not justifying the public attack. But as they migrate to South Africa now, all of these things need to be packaged and be spoken to. But for me, as I close, we need to speak to the South Africans in their own ordinary language. English is a limiting factor. Social media is a limiting factor. Print media, the TV, all of it don't reach out to people in the manner that the 18 or so. Of course, if you include the radio stations, there are many that we can have people speaking to us about that. Thank you very much. And congratulations on a very good presentation. I'm going to use extensively this note in the statement that I'm going to issue. That we will have this discussion about consular services. And then, of course, here are the things that the department is offering, and here are the tools and processes that are there. But again, the limiting factor is that it's going to be. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for. Thank you for those questions and comments, some of which I'll note as comments, and others we will attempt to answer it now. The first set of questions from our Honourable Member regarding the non-financial assistance. And this point has been covered already, Honourable Chairperson, on the church collapse in Lagos, wherein you had a large-scale disaster of a church collapsing with worshippers in that church. Approximately 108 South Africans were part of that casualty, wherein 88 have lost their lives. Also, what the member raised is to say that we say that we do not pay for mortal remains to return back to South Africa. Now, this is a very interesting case, and I'm glad that you raised it here, Honourable Member, so that you can offer some clarification as to what we can pay for and what we cannot pay for. Generally, when it comes to the return of mortal remains, the family takes care of it. We offer non-financial support. In the case of the church disaster in Lagos, because of the large-scale disaster and the number of South African lives that were lost there, the South African government declared it, through the Office of the President, to be a national disaster, which then activated the state to bear the cost to bring back those mortal remains, with the assistance of the Department of Defense. If you recall, the Deputy President also traveled there to inspect, offer support to the families. DERCO, we activated the Consular Incident Command Center, wherein we set up helplines for the members of the public, offering counseling services and so forth with partner departments like Department of Social Development and so forth, to offer support to the families, to answer the questions, to field queries about where my family members are, whether they were affected in the disaster, etc. So, as a principle, it is non-financial support, but when it is declared to be a national disaster on a large scale like that has happened in the Lagos disaster, then the state funds are activated to bring back the mortal remains. Honourable Member, you also wanted to know about, we do not intervene in criminal cases. So what is happening with the two South African teachers that are there in China? As I indicated, we did not offer legal services, but we can give you a database of attorneys and so forth to make sure that the family can have good representation in the country where the criminal case has been committed. But what is important in this, in this kind of intervention, is that we cannot, when it comes to the sovereignty of another state, we cannot intervene. The laws of that country have been violated. Like, we wouldn't want foreign countries to tell us how to run our, or how to implement our laws and regulations, and to be lenient on some of our laws and regulations regarding their nationals. In the same way, they would not want their sovereignty to be encroached upon. So, as I said earlier, is that we can offer a database of legal companies, which the family is using at the moment, to try and see how this case can be represented properly in court, and if at all appeals can be made to the Chinese authorities when it comes to this. But at the end of the day, the sovereignty of that country will prevail over the matter. So I hope that I've adequately answered that one. Regarding the pregnancies out of wedlock, the question, if I heard it correctly, is what happens to South Africans if they are found to be seen to have a pregnancy out of wedlock? What will happen in that case? And that is why we offer the assistance, and we also say, research the country thoroughly before you go there. Know what is allowed, know what is not allowed. Know what the do's and don'ts, what the culture of that country. We've had people going to countries and they do not have a clue about the religious practice in that country. Where Friday seems to be a holy day and they are busy partying. So these can be seen as offences of the country. So research thoroughly the country that you're going to travel or work or go study before you make your trip. And if it's the laws of that country that out of wedlock there cannot be a pregnancy, then obviously you will have to either cancel your trip or look at other ways of making that trip. But it is the way it is, and if it's the laws of that country, then unfortunately you're expected to follow. The South African Constitution does not prevail in other countries, unfortunately. It's the constitution of those countries, the laws and regulations of those countries, that will prevail over whatever the offences that you've been seen to be flouting. The public awareness with the Rosa, and you used an example, I think, regarding the church collapse, where you said, and you're absolutely correct. From those 108 that were involved in that tragedy, none of them registered with Rosa. Zero. And that's a challenge, because South Africans, they are free. It's their own will, their own free will to register or not. And if they choose not to register, there's no way that we can force them upon some regulation to say, you have to register. Yes, so none of them, it was very unfortunate. So we had to rely on families that were calling to say, so and so, my family member, my friend, uncle, auntie, whomever, travel to Nigeria, can you please check if they are one of the list of those people that are in hospital or been affected by this disaster. So as much as the department has had this ROSA campaign, ROSA is the registration of South Africans abroad. I'll come to that. The department spent approximately 300,000 rand some 10 years back on the program called ROSA. And on average, between 250 to about 300 people registered per month. The rest of them didn't see the need in doing so. So it then meant that you could not force... South Africa is a free place. People can do as they please. is there freedom of movement. Our constitution allows for people to be free. Unlike other countries, like for example, if I can use an example like China, the Chinese government requires you, before you travel, to inform the government about where you're going to be, either working, visiting, whatever your visit is going to be about, business, whatever it might be. You are required by law to say where you're going to go before they decide to issue you with whatever travel documents required. And also by law, you are required to have travel insurance. If you do not have travel insurance, they will not allow you to travel. Because they do not want you to become a burden to the state when you find yourself in difficulty abroad. The travel insurance should kick in when you are finding yourself in a difficulty. So, the point is noted regarding Rosa and the church disaster. None of the people registered, and we had to then work on helplines and queries from the public to ask about their family members that were involved in that disaster. I think let's answer the question about whether Rosa is working or not now. It's come up in previous in other questions, so let me rather take it now. Rosa, we've taken Rosa off the air. It was an old application, and there were serious updating issues that we were having, even on the confidentiality of the information. So what the department decided was to take Rosa off the air, and we got that information on the website to say that Rosa has been now taken off the air. It's no longer an application that we are using. But what have we replaced Rosa with? We are encouraging South Africans, whether they're working, traveling, studying abroad, that they register with the embassies in those countries. Or even before you leave South Africa, you send us an email, and we've got it in the communication as well. We're calling it rosahelp@derco.gov.za. You can even send us an email at, on an email called consular@derco.gov.za. We publish this information on our website to say, give us the countries that you're traveling. And once we receive a registration and we feel that the information is not adequate, we email that person a form to complete with all the details, and then we capture the details and we also pass it on to the country in which that person is traveling. At our missions, during functions, when South Africans come there to make inquiries, we encourage them to fill in the form so that we keep it in our file for the duration that they're going to remain in that country. So this is the way we are doing it. We're doing it through a manual paper-based system. Now, the member earlier on, the one that left, mentioned about Facebook, Twitter, and so forth. The department is now looking at social media as a way of registration. Most of the countries are going in that direction. Some of them got their own applications, but strangely enough, those that have their own applications, like the Canadian, the British, the American, and so forth, they also have a similar kind of problem, where they spend millions on an application, whether it's on a cell phone, or whether it's a computer-based, or whether it's through a website. They spend millions on an application, but people don't register. It's only when they get into difficulties, then you hear from the families, or you hear from them to say, I'm in a problem, only to find that you never register. So registering, it actually helps us because we know if there's a disaster in a place like the church that collapsed, then we are able to contact the family next of kin or the embassy to say, so many South Africans have registered, can you please check their whereabouts? Can you see if they're safe? Is everything okay? We had a major problem when it came to the Caribbean hurricane. It was difficult because there again, the South Africans had a WhatsApp group. Fortunately, the person that was managing that WhatsApp group shared all the contact details, and then we started communicating through WhatsApp, through email, and through the British High Commission to find out if these people are okay, and then we found that there was only one South African that was a little bit of in distress, but he managed to get to some point of safety. So, regarding Rosa, we have replaced it with a paper-based system until such time we can have more user-friendly applications like social media and so forth, where people can register. But we are allowing our South African public to go to our website, look at the email, send us an email, or if you already have arrived in the country, know the contact details of your embassy, send us an email, go to the embassy, complete a form, fax, email, whatever it is, that you have facilities of to send us the information of your whereabouts and tell us how long you're going to be there so that we can make contact with you should there be emergencies. On the next set of questions which came from the Honourable Member, adverts for young people working abroad, fake websites, green card and so forth.
Yes.
From time to time, we do get queries from the members of the public. Like for example, the group that went to China, they didn't inquire from the department. They didn't inquire from the Chinese embassy. There's one student that went to the Chinese embassy and said, look here, I've got this pamphlet. This money looks amazing. I'm only 30 years old and I think this will be perfect for me. Then she asked the Chinese embassy, can you please check to see if this recruitment agency is authentic? And they came back and said, no, we don't have it on our database. So she immediately pulled out of it. And then she tried to spread the news to the others, but you had local South Africans involved with the Chinese syndicate that were, you know, forcing people to take this opportunity of taking the student visa, going to work in China, and only to find that you were illegal in China. So through this campaign, through the advice that we're offering, we are cautioning the public about these kind of things. If you are not sure, ask JERCO. Ask those countries where these things are being published. They've got websites. You can even send them a contact email to say, I have received this job opportunity, or I received this advert regarding a green card. Is it fake? Is it real? Or is this information true and correct? Do you know about it? Is it registered with a government organization? These are the things that the members of the public should be asking. And under the do's and don'ts in the marketing campaign, we are saying these things to the public. Please research, find out this information before you make your move to go and work abroad, only to find that whatever was promised to you is not actually what it is about. Consular services working with DHA on the green card scam for America, check on this and make the public aware. Thank you very much. That comment is well taken. And I think there is partnerships with DHA on these kind of scams where from time to time DHA does receive these inquiries, and if they don't have the information, they pass it on to JERCO and we try to assist them with that information. But remember, where DHA is present, Department of Home Affairs, where in those countries where they are present, they fall under the leadership of the ambassador of the High Commissioner in that country. So through the reporting structure, that mission will then, if they are unsure about information, will then pass it on to the local authorities of the country, or if they are still not sure, they will pass it on to JERCO and we will check with our embassy in Pretoria to find out if this information is correct, so that we make the public aware. But we take note of that comment and we will also foster closer working relationships with the Department of Home Affairs, because I agree that whatever happens when it comes to an emergency, they're not going to say no. That's DHA's responsibility, that is JERCO's responsibility. It is the South African government's responsibility, so we should be seen as one. So thank you very much for that one. On the news of the death sentence in Vietnam, which recently was passed on the 23rd of August, it's very unfortunate. Very, very unfortunate. This person was arrested in 2016 and then now sentenced to death on the 23rd of August. Currently, we are totally aware of the case. It's also gone to the media as well. Currently, we are liaising through the Office of the Minister and through the relevant structures with our embassy in Hanoi regarding the death sentence. When South Africans receive a death sentence abroad, we always ask the minister to talk to her counterpart either in writing or in a meeting to see if we can commute the death sentence to a life sentence. Because as per our constitution, we see the death sentence as being not human. So therefore we make an appeal. Currently also as we speak, there are 6 South Africans in Malaysia for the past 3 years that are sitting on the death row waiting to be hanged for drug-related offences. So now the head of state has written to the monarch in Malaysia asking for leniency so that these South Africans can, or the, so the sentence of death can be commuted to a life imprisonment. We have not received an answer, but the state of these people just remains the way it is. Obviously, when they do decide on whether they're going to accept this appeal that we made from South Africa, we will know about it. But currently, the status quo remains that they still are on death row and waiting for the date that they'll be hanged. You know, in some countries, after they execute the person, then they inform to say that on this day, this is what happened. But it's unfortunate because the laws of that country prevail over this. And as I mentioned earlier, the sovereignty of that state is the one that will take precedence. And if they see these offences as being receiving a difference, there's no way we can say to them how to apply the law. Wherever the offence has been committed, the laws of that country will apply. And at the end of the day, the only thing we can do is make an appeal to those authorities of those countries, asking that we commute the death sentence to a life imprisonment, as we would do in our country.
5 minutes left.
Okay. I think I covered the point on the Chinese national with spouse. That was a very unfortunate case of a Chinese national who married a South African and said to the mother, look, the child is 3 years old now. Can we go and visit my mother? Because the child has not seen the grandmother. Only to find that when you reach China, you say, I'm now off on my business trip. You can remain with my mother, and so can the child. And then the mother then looks at the passport, but tomorrow is my visa expired. So she has to make a decision whether she remains illegally in that country or leave a child and then go. You know. So then eventually she had to leave because she would have been charged for violating the immigration laws of that country in China. So she had to leave, and that case is still going on. And just to answer the question, I mentioned this in my slide, that we work together with the Department of Social Development.
Yeah.
The chief... Yes.
Can you revisit this detail? Can you revisit this detail?
Yes.
This is a female South African.
Yes.
And husband of my friend is Chinese.
Chinese, national.
So the other child here in South Africa.
Yes.
And they went to China.
To go visit the grandmother. The mother of the Chinese. Of the person.
Yeah.
Husband. Well, they were married, yeah.
Then, was about to expire.
A visa.
Mm-hmm.
She needed a visa to travel to China.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the visa was about to expire.
So she had to come back.
She had to come back, otherwise she would have been illegal.
Husband also came back.
No, the husband said, I'm traveling to another province in China for business. And the child remained. The child remained with the grandmother. Yeah. So that case is being handled by the family advocate, advocate Siabi. She's dealing with that case of we're calling it child abduction. So we unfortunately have not yet resolved that case. It still remains the way it is. And you find that in a lot of countries, when this kind of things happen, they are they take the side of their national, and they say no, we don't want to do anything. So it's just a relationship between countries that will see how the return of this child can happen. Regarding the OPA and working with Department of Education, thank you very much for that. We will take note of that and definitely follow that advice. On the pamphlet, the questions on the pamphlet, the honourable member had the questions on the pamphlet. I agree. When you say that the pamphlet has got too much of information, might be overloaded. We will look at other releases of the pamphlet where we will take this comment into consideration. Regarding the information on the switchboard, now let me just inform the House. Our switchboard is available 24/7, 365. 012-351-1000. So during office hours, when you call with the consular query, you are directed to the consular section that handles your matter. After hours, your query is being directed to the mission where this happened, or to the country where it has happened. And if we don't have a mission or don't have presence there, it comes back. We have deputy directors that are there on standby, also 24/7, 365, that will take this inquiry and then liaise with our mission when the mission opens up, if it's after office hours, to deal with the case. Recently, we started a WhatsApp group where we are sending WhatsApp messages of emergencies that we have, even if it's after hours. But the switchboard is open 24/7, 365. There's no other thing that I need to mention about it. It is available where people are able to get through, and we are able to.
Want to make a follow-up?
Yes.
I have to leave, but I need to get this answer.
Okay.
You're saying, so if somebody phones during the South African night, but it's daytime, wherever. I want to know how, you're saying it's directed to the embassy that where the query should be. Who does the directing? Is it automation? Is it a human being? Because you are saying when the office is open, then the query will be dealt with. So we cannot say this is an emergency service when the person has to wait till South Africa is awake and work. That's the point I'm trying to get.
Okay. No, thanks for that. Let me just clarify that further. If, for example, when we are sleeping, the incident has happened in Washington, which is during their business hours, the query is being directed to the mission in Washington or to the mission in New York for whatever the consular query might be. And we have colleagues...
Sorry, via this number.
Via this number, 351-1000. If they cannot connect the caller, they will take down the details of the caller. They will contact the mission in Washington or New York or wherever the incident has happened, and we have presence there, to inform that such and such thing has happened. And the mission will be given the contact details, email address and so forth of the person that called in South Africa with this query. And if for example, Washington is asleep, I'm using Washington as an example, and this incident happened during our business hours. Then, in Washington, we have colleagues with after-hour duty phone that will take the call and deal with the query.
Okay.
So, regarding the hotline, that's the hotline that we have, 012-351-1000. The ETC, the Emergency Travel Certificate, is issued by the Department of Home Affairs. Now, if a South African comes to the embassy to say, look, I've lost my passport, the only way we can verify that this indeed is a South African is by taking fingerprints and checking across, yes, the biometric, and sending it by email, scanning it and sending it by email to Home Affairs, who then verifies against the population whether this is a South African using the biometric. And if indeed we confirm that this is a South African, then the mission receives instruction, proceed with the ETC. But without that verification, an ETC cannot be issued. So a South African, even if a South African comes with a photocopy of a passport, it's difficult because now how are we going to do the verification? It could be a fake passport. So you need to take the fingerprint, send it back to Pretoria Home Affairs. Pretoria then verifies on the population register to see if this fingerprint matches this person here. Once that verification happens, then they say to the mission, proceed.
What is the turnaround time?
The turnaround time, if the fingerprint database is down, for example, then there can be delays from Home Affairs. And those are regrettable unexpected delays. But in most cases, I think within 3 to 5 days they do it. It is a challenge. So regarding the two arrested in China and the laying of criminal charges, just to inform the Honourable Member that the agency in China that has done the recruitment, together with the two South Africans that they've been working, have been arrested, including the institution that has taken these people. They've been arrested. The leadership of that school has been arrested. So legal action has been taken by the Chinese authorities. The Chinese authorities see this to be a very serious crime. Regarding the case of McGowan and whether the South African government paid money, our minister, together with the Minister of State Security, went on to the media to say that the South African government has facilitated the release of Mr. McGowan and no ransom monies have been paid. As a state, we do not pay ransom monies because we do not support criminal activity.
There's an intervention that
yes.
For more time.
That comment, I assume, is related to the ETC on the fingerprint.
Yeah.
Okay. The fingerprints, if I can just respond, the fingerprints database is on DHA's website. Sorry, it's on DHA's database in Pretoria. So, countrywide and internationally, that verifies.
Can you correct that? Yeah. I'm saying holistically, the IT system needs to talk so that when it's major, there are 10 around people.
Thanks, Honourable Member, and note of that. Just to come back on the set of questions regarding the McGowan release, which I said this government does not support criminal activities, neither do we support terrorist organizations, so we don't pay these ransom money. Regarding the case of Shiraz Mohammed, which Honourable Member has raised, he went into Syria as a photojournalist for the Gift of the Givers. And the Gift of the Givers has reported him missing soon after he crossed the border and then went into Syria to do his work. Currently, the status quo remains that he is missing. But we've received unofficial reports from the quarters of intelligence to say that they think he might have crossed the border and joined the rebel organization. And he's living very comfortably. But these are unconfirmed reports. We did not verify this. We are still waiting for our intelligence. It still remains as a case to be resolved. He is still reported as being missing in Syria in our book. So that's the case of Shiraz Mohammed, the photojournalist. With regards to extradition agreements, there are, I don't know the exact number because those are managed by our bilateral desk in terms of extradition agreement, but on a case-to-case basis, depending on the nature of the crime and the agreements between countries, there will be extradition agreements that are signed on a case-to-case basis. We do not have a prisoner transfer agreement regarding the bringing back of South African prisoners and the sending of prisoners abroad. It's been in the media recently to say that they will start looking at the one with Brazil because a lot of South African prisoners are in the Brazilian jail. But the prisoner transfer agreement is the competency of the Department of Correctional Services. We don't hold that, that we are not custodians of those kind of things regarding prisoner transfer agreement, although we will contribute, and we did contribute to a document where Department of Correctional Services said they will start with SADC countries having prisoner transfer agreements because there are lots of foreigners sitting in our jails which we need to release back to those countries and of course bring South Africans back home. But the Department of Correctional Services is the custodian of that.
You know that now here is the South African prisoner in Vietnam.
Yes.
And here he is very tired.
then they won't have the means to come to South Africa.
So,
the authorities that side will alert South Africa that you have a treatment there, now the European side must go to South Africa and then alert the family, and the family must pay for the traveling. How long will it take?
Yes.
You may not speak to that, but the next thing you can say that, since you want to touch him.
Okay, maybe members, there is a difference between extradition and exchange of prisoners.
Yes.
Extradition, you actually apply for a person for the purposes of adjudication of evidence, to try and get evidence out of that person. But then with an exchange of prisoners, this person has already been convicted and serving sentence.
Then
when the prisoner who has been convicted dies in prison, then the mortal remains are transferred to South Africa. In the manner that he explained, that it's the family who is responsible. But the mission will facilitate so that, you know, the family is well, you know, guided on the laws and the requirements of that country for the removal of the remains to South Africa. Unfortunately.
Okay. No. Thanks. It is absolutely true that once a prisoner dies in prison, then the accusation on the side of the family would come into play to say if they can afford to pay for the mortal remains to return back to South Africa. If not possible, then that person will be either buried or cremated in that country.
Mm-hmm.
And the government of that country takes care of it like they would do for any other, if we can call it a pauper funeral. So, just the last two from the speaker that's leaving. Regarding the prison conditions in Sao Paulo, you're absolutely correct. I visited myself, and the prison conditions are really, really appalling. It's shocking. But what our mission does is to make sure that the human rights of these people is being upheld, like we would apply human rights in South Africa, although it might not be completely desirable. And we also make sure that the prisoners are treated like any other foreign prisoners, including local prisoners, that they don't receive any worse of treatment other than what is being meted out to the others that are there in prison. And does consular provide support? Yes, our mission in Sao Paulo visits the women's prison as well as the male prison as often as they can, because most of our prisoners are sitting in South America. And they offer support and assistance, even if the families are sending money or toiletries and things like that, they offer it to the prisoners. I've even been told by the colleagues in Sao Paulo that they even dig into their pockets, the diplomats that are sitting in Sao Paulo, to support these people for toiletries and for consumables that they might need in these prisons. So that one. And joint activities of the TCF have noted the point. And prisoners abroad, what type of offences? Most of the prisoners is drug related offense. And that socioeconomic reasons that have led to these people committing these offenses. I take note of the point that there should be public diplomacy on drug and fake recruitment. We will bring this to the attention of our public diplomacy when they're going on the campaign. In fact, the public diplomacy unit in the department are the custodians of the Travel Smart campaign. We feed them with information and we present in radio interviews and so forth. Travel Smart must work better than Rosa. Thank you very much for the comment, and we will ensure that we do our best with the Travel Smart campaign to take it to every corner of South Africa through the radio, adverts and so forth. There is a program which I have, and I thought I'll just mention it quickly, Chairperson, that is going to be held even in the vernacular languages, where Deputy Minister Maulu is going to be doing school visitations. They're also going to be visiting universities and so forth. And they also will be conducting radio interviews on this campaign to get the message out. In fact, the one that I presented last week to Daily Theta on SABC 1, it was conducted in the vernacular, obviously. Whatever I was saying in English was being translated through footnotes in that program. So we take note of this. Also, it came to our attention that we should also be sensitive to the deaf viewers.
Yeah.
So there is interpretation also for the deaf viewers. In fact, that program of Daily Theta, they had an interpretation for the deaf viewers as well to get the message across. We must collaborate with DHA. Civic documents delay, I agree. It is a big challenge. And the problem of the dip bag was an issue. And in the case that you used was in London. But now the contract with the courier company that was doing the dip bag has been reinstated. There was a challenge that they were receiving around issues of budget and payment and so forth. So the custodian for the dip bag between South Africa and the missions abroad is Durko. The contents of the document and the destination in which it goes to, for example, the civic documents that you spoke about, goes to the Department of Home Affairs, where it's sent for processing in Pretoria. With regard to dual citizenship, now, when a person that is dual citizenship holder, if he or she lands in a country with his or her South African passport, then we will offer consular assistance. But if he or she lands in a country of his or her nationality, where you hold the dual citizenship, then that country will have to take care of their citizens. So that's on the... I hope I got the point that you talked about on dual citizenship.
It's about the letter of retention.
Sorry?
It's about the letter of retention.
The retention... the retention on dual citizenship will depend on the individual. If he or she does not renew their dual citizenship, then obviously that one that they have second dual nationality will then follow it. We've had lots of cases like this in Australia and New Zealand.
Mm.
Yeah, where South Africans holding dual citizenship did not renew, and after a certain time frame, then it fell away. Check the work of consular services abroad. I agree. Sometimes it is a challenge in some of our missions where they're not prompt with the answering of consular queries, and we have to then make contact and escalate it to the High Commissioner or the Ambassador to say such and such case has been reported, such and such person has been detained or imprisoned, and we're not getting prompt responses from the mission. And that is why the Minister is now getting involved in sending a letter to the High Commissioner. Last year we did send a letter from the DG's office to say the importance of consular services. I spoke about the renewal of the contract with the courier company. The Delta website is functional, and all of the information that I shared, including the information on the brochure as well as the information about Rosa, is there on the Delta website. And when you talk about the mission, there are hyperlinks on the website of Delta that takes you to the mission's website where you have contact details and so forth. Insofar as voter registration, it's a very interesting question. The custodian of the voter registration is the IEC. So I just want to say, what is DIRCO's role in the 2019 election? In accordance with the mandate, guidance and instruction provided by the IEC, DIRCO will provide its officers and staff stationed at the missions abroad to facilitate the election process abroad on behalf of the IEC. That's the role that DIRCO plays. We provide resources, we receive all the information from the IEC, but the custodian remains the IEC. Okay. Yes, and if missions are experiencing difficulties, we do. I've seen head office sending colleagues from head office or from home affairs to assist the missions when it comes to resourcing.
There are more
hands.
There's another hand.
Yes.
Yeah.
out there, outside the country. So can we just have them, because we are also from IEC
yes.
and Home Affairs.
Okay.
Because there are some little things that are being done.
Okay.
Totally things that, that are out of all. So cut them, because we are not an expert.
Yes, no, absolutely. Therefore, I said the Kasurin is IAC. But thanks for questioning.
No,
because
the essence is just about it, because not a technicality of the Home Affairs and IAC issue. But just we have the staff and the resources to allow people to come and then to
send
our mission.
Okay, as I indicated, that if the mission is receiving resource issues, then they will communicate to head office to say they're experiencing resource issues. Honorable Chairperson, the point that you raised.
No,
thank you for that, Chairperson. Chairperson, just to approach the last set of questions that were posed by yourself, thank you very much for congratulating the department on the travel smart campaign. The Deputy Minister and our Ministry has definitely taken the subject seriously, therefore they made available that I come here to present to the Portfolio Committee. Website media, except it does not have far-reaching information, absolutely true, and we are conducting radio interviews as well. And also this query about getting to the municipalities. The year before last, I made presentations for the Premier's office, and all the municipalities in the Eastern Cape were invited to that presentation. And this thing that came up to say, people have money to spend, but they are sitting in the far rural villages of the Eastern Cape where they don't have websites, they don't have any means of communication other than to say we've got money to buy the ticket to travel. So we want to get the message out right down to the municipalities as well. And definitely we take the suggestion that radio is a more accessible means of communication, and it's being also conducted in the vernacular in terms of the interviews and in terms of the information that we want to pass out to the members of the public. And we also involving the municipalities as well to get the communication out to the members of the public. What happens to South African illegal immigrants in other countries, to those involved in criminal cases in other countries? What happens to South Africa? This is regarding the joining of armies of another country and the one of terrorists. The one of armies of another country, we have not really experienced or had such queries, but we've had queries of South Africans joining a rebel terrorist organization. Yes. And currently, as we speak, we have some families sitting in a no man's land in Syria waiting to come back to South Africa. So, as consular, Honorable Chairperson, our duty is to fulfill our mandate. If a South African has reported that he or she is in distress wherever it is in the world, and if we have the means, we will assist that person. And that's our job according to the mandate, is to assist the person. If they want to come back to South Africa, then we will also help with the documentation to get them back to South Africa. Then we have authorities like National Prosecution Authority, the police services, and so forth, who will then take care of the responsibility of the criminality of those people in terms of whatever they went to go and do abroad. They will deal with these people here. Our job, according to the mandate, is to bring these people back. And then the authorities that are dealing with the criminal cases will obviously interview these people and deal with the whatever criminal activities that they've gone abroad, if at all they can prove the allegations. With regards to mortal remains, if a traveler has gone for religious reasons, in the case of the Nigerian disaster, the mortal remains came back. I think that answered the question to say that if the state declares it to be a national disaster, then the state comes in, provides resources to bring back the mortal remains, depending on the scale of the disaster. I note the point on the asylum seekers, South African asylum seekers. You know, strangely enough, we don't have cases that have been reported to us of South African asylum seekers in other countries. South Africa is a very free country. It's a peace-loving country. So if you ask me, according to the statistics, there was one or two cases where people tried to go on. There was one or two cases where people tried to go abroad and then seek asylum in another country for persecution in South Africa, and they said, but South Africa is a peaceful country. And what is it that you came to seek asylum? And then those cases were overthrown. Okay. Media should be involved in local languages. I think I've answered the question on the radio station and the local languages. This campaign of Travel Smart, we are doing it in the local languages as well. So with that, I would like to thank the chairperson and honorable members for giving us this opportunity. I hope I've answered the questions to the best of my ability, and that which we have not, we will definitely engage on bilateral. And our colleague has taken note, Mr. Tata has taken note. We will provide further information if it is required.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tata.
I'll give you.